Calvin Valentine. Calvin Valentine.
Let me welcome you to another edition of the KO Show, brought to you by 5-4 Club. 5-4 Club offers a unique, original, customized clothing delivery, which takes trying things on, shopping for clothes, and trying to find that great deal just right out of the way. Use the promo code MBA for 50% off your first order. I just got a great package of clothing from them, and I can't wait to get the next. All right, so as always, I am the half of the KO, the O portion, Oliver Maroney, and the other half, my co-host, Noah, should be on here shortly. We'll be here for the next couple of hours here to discuss all things NBA Finals. We've got a great show lined up today. Antonio Davis, Dave Smith, obviously Antonio Davis from ESPN, Dave Smith from NBC Sports Radio coming up on to chat about this matchup between the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. But first, let's take a look and just kind of run down what happened in Game 1 and kind of my opinion on it. So my personal opinion, I really likened whoever won the game one. The reason I say this is because it was my thinking that Golden State would be the most vulnerable coming off that emotional roller coaster of that incredible 7-game series in the Western Conference Finals with only 2 days of rest. I felt if Cleveland was going to win in Oakland, it would have to be in game one. And that obviously wasn't the case, as Sean Livingston, Barbosa, Iguodala, basically the entire Warriors bench really stepped up. It was an impressive game for me, specifically in the sense that, you know, Golden State's two best players throughout the playoffs really didn't have much of an impact. So with my theory, I think this could go 5 or 7 games. It really just depends on whether Golden State can win this game two and then potentially steal one in Cleveland or not. I would assume that Golden State's going to win at home the rest of this series, and I've predicted it already, but I think the Warriors are going to win this series. It's just a matter of, is it in 5 or is it in 7? Based on the way they played yesterday, obviously Klay and Steph were certainly bombarded. They were defended very well. But Cleveland forgot about 3 other players on the court and really hurt themselves on the defensive end in regards to paying respect to the other Golden State players. Now, people can make the argument that they did a great job on Klay and Steph and that the bench isn't going to do this night in and night out, but I have to disagree. The way Golden State exploited the mismatches and the way that Draymond Green, that Andre Iguodala, that Sean Livingston were wide open on a lot of these plays, I just have to feel like they're going to continue to make those high efficiency shots anyways. So for me, I think it's more about looking at this Cleveland team. And I think the fear of this Cleveland team is coaching. Although Lou has the coaching experience in the NBA, I just don't think he can make the defensive adjustments to match up in this series. Golden State and their death lineup, look, they've been incredible. I mean, it's incredibly hard to beat. The only team we've really had seen any success with is Oklahoma City. And what did Oklahoma City do? They beat them up, they manhandled them, and they really controlled the play of the game. And that's what Cleveland needs to do in order to beat the Warriors. You aren't going to beat the Warriors by playing the Warriors style of game. The Warriors are the best, and that's the reason why. You cannot beat them by shooting threes and getting open looks on the outside perimeter when you don't have the three-point shooters that Golden State has. Cleveland doesn't have that. Yes, maybe Channing Frye can come up big. Maybe Kevin Love can hit a couple threes. But as we saw yesterday, 38% from the field isn't exactly wonderful, and they did have some open looks in there. I don't care what people say. I think that they did have an opportunity to win this game if they were able to be more efficient, and they just couldn't. LeBron, I think they played LeBron defensively as good as they possibly could. As long as you're keeping him within that 20 to 30 point range and keeping him a low efficiency, I think you're in the game always. And so for me personally, it's got to be about coaching, and Lou has to make these adjustments. They've got to slow the tempo down and get LeBron in those back on the block kind of motions, get him into the high efficiency game where he can go to the lane, get fouled, get free throws. And they did win in the free throw category for 2 of the 4 quarters, I believe. And that's really where I think they can exploit this and potentially pull the upset is if LeBron, if, you know, Channing Frye, if Kevin Love can bring it to the rack a little bit more and be more offensively aware that they can take it into the hole, take it into the rack, get fouled, get to the stripe. I mean, really, that's where they're going to have a lot of success. And I think LeBron has had that in the past in the finals. But right now, it's not looking like LeBron is the same LeBron that we were thinking he was going to be. The Cavs looked great coming into this series, but let's not forget, the Eastern Conference is the Eastern Conference. It's not the Western Conference. And right now, look, Toronto's a great team, but they're way off from what Golden State, Oklahoma City, San Antonio. I mean, you could even put Portland or potentially the Clippers all in that category above the Toronto Raptors. I don't think anybody would be arguing with me to say that they'd all go seven games against Toronto. So in that aspect, I think Cleveland just got a shot in the face. They understood what was going on. They got it. And from now on, you're going to have to look at this and see what Cleveland's going to do in game 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, if it goes that far. And I think Lou is the number one key contributor to this. He needs to take the clipboard. He needs to go back to the drawing board. He needs to figure out how he's going to defend Clay and Steph. And if he's going to allow them to have some open shots and opportunities, I think that's the only way they can win, is just to hope that one of them is off and the other one doesn't go off for 41 or 45 points like we've seen in the past. Let's think about this series a little bit more in depth as far as what's going on and how the mismatches are being exploited. I really think the one thing that Steph does so well is he basically grabs two or three defenders at one time and knows that he's being double or triple teamed and finds that open man. He is way underrated as a passer. Let's be honest. He is a very efficient scorer, but on the other end, he also can assist basically anyone on his team at any point in time. And he finds these openings, and you know, it's not just Steph. It's the way the team plays. They are cutting. They're always slashing. They're always moving off the ball. It is so difficult to defend. And you can watch the defenders get so frustrated because they have no one else to help out with. So looking at this series, I still, in my gut feeling, I've got Golden State winning this thing. And I did have it in seven. I think this could even go five based on the way that Lou has been coaching. I don't need to hamper on Lou, but I just don't think he has it in him to be able to adjust like Steve Kerr does or like another high-end coach in the league does. He just doesn't have that experience in his belt. And with LeBron on your team, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, that's a lot of egos to manage at a very young age. He doesn't have that experience yet, and I don't know if he ever will, but that's going to be the difference in this game. Can Lou coach? Can he figure out a way to exploit the mismatch and get LeBron the ball in the post? I think that's going to be a key in this series because LeBron obviously has lost some of his shooting. He's lost a little bit of that jump shot. So I think that the way to win is to get to the stripe, get LeBron the ball, get Kevin Love off the ball involved, and Kyrie Irving involved. And they've all got a 3B in motion. They've all got to be working together in an effort to play against the Warriors and slow this thing down. 24 seconds on the shot clock. You've got 24 seconds to create an opportunity. That's all you need. Okay? Golden State may take 12 seconds to get in transition and run, but if you're slowing this game down and making it difficult and beating them up defensively, offensively, they may have a tough time in the third and fourth quarter, and that may be an idea or a place that they can exploit that could potentially get the Warriors frustrated, get Draymond Green in foul trouble, get others in foul trouble. So that's what they're going to have to do. Like I said, we've got a great show lined up for you today. This is just the beginning. We've got Antonio Davis on in just a couple of minutes. He's going to go over some of the finals things. We're also going to get his take on the Raptors situation. I really am interested to hear about what he has to say about Dwayne Casey. I just found him like an intriguing coach for the longest time in the NBA. People always bash on him. I'm not as low as most people are on him, but you know, getting that extension, he's getting paid almost what Terry Stotts is getting paid in Portland. That seems a little high for me based on what they've done. Obviously, he's got him to a conference finals. He's got him very far in the playoffs. Record, franchise record and wins. But the hopes in Toronto land over there are way higher than whatever this team can possibly achieve. And so I think Casey did get a pretty good contract. I think he's going to have to prove himself And I would not be surprised to see him leave if they underachieve even just this season. So watch out for that. We're going to have Antonio on here shortly, give him a call, talk to him about kind of what's going on in the finals as well. Noah will be on with us shortly. And then I do also have a good friend of mine, Dave Smith from the NBC Sports Network, coming on. He's going to discuss a lot of things from his career, as well as we're going to go into detail on the NBA Finals, what he thinks is the best matchup, what he feels is the best for Cleveland, down to the nitty-gritty and all this stuff. But for now, let's just figure out, basically, in the next couple of minutes here, talk about a couple other things. I really wanted to just play this clip really quick because I always find it interesting. The media sessions and the press conferences post-game and pre-game are just so interesting to me. A lot of the guys that are on there and asking these questions, typically they've done it before. But every once in a while, you get one guy in there who really may not know what question he's asking, or he's new to this whole process. I want you guys to listen in on this interesting LeBron rebuttal.
Far right side of the aisle.
Jason Lescu, SFB. LeBron, does obviously this team and the series is a lot different than last year, but how much different after this game here do you think it is?
I don't quite get your question.
With, you know, the Warriors roster is the same, but, you know, last year it was Curry, it was Clay, and some of those guys taking over. But after game one, having the bench go and score 45 points, does that change your view of how this series might go and what you have to prepare for?
I think you're wrong in the fact of saying it was just Clay and Steph. I mean, they got to the point where they were last year and won a championship because of their whole team and their bench. And they're here once again in the finals because of their whole team. So, you know, nothing has really changed. They're a team that's had another year under their belt, and they've exceeded what they did last year. So it's kind of hard to answer that question because it's not really true.
And that was LeBron there, obviously, in the press conference. I just find it interesting. You know, we're going to have Antonio Davis on. I think he's on the line here. Let's see if he is available.
Hello.
All right.
Okay.
Antonio, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here now.
Ah, there you go. Sorry about that. How's it going?
It's all right. Good, man. How are you guys?
Not too bad. Obviously, ESPN analyst, former NBA All-Star, didn't really get that introduction in there. Obviously, let's go into this game one here. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on it. Obviously, game one was pretty one-sided. Cleveland got within a couple possessions a few times, but for the most part, it really wasn't all that close. What's your expectation for the rest of this series?
Well, I expect Cleveland to go back and come back actually with a different game plan. It just seems as though they were tearing a page out of OKC's book and playing a lot of one-on-one basketball, you know. They were playing it for the right reasons to try to create some double teams. You have to go and shrink the court and double team LeBron. You have to have help on Kyrie. But, I mean, that's what Golden State does, you know. They do a great job of rotating on defense and making you find that guy, you know, at the three-point line and running out at that guy and making him shoot a tough shot with a hand in his face. So, I don't know. I expect them to get back to what they were doing in the playoffs to get to this point where they've only played, you know, about 13 games or so, you know, which is moving the ball and being very difficult to guard because they have so much talent, so many guys who can spread the floor and knock down shots.
Exactly. And as a reminder, everyone, ABC will be airing the NBA final games, obviously via ESPN. But let's keep going into this a little bit more. During the game, it seemed like Cleveland did a good job of shutting down Steph and Clay, but really didn't factor in all the other guys that could make an impact. And this goes, for me at least, back to Lou and how he's shown the ability to make adjustments, but maybe not the best of adjustments in the right way. I think there could have been a lot more done at halftime and going into the fourth quarter that they could have mixed things up a little bit. But what do you think in game two the Cavs can do differently?
Well, you know, I don't think you could have planned for that. You know, I was watching the game, and at halftime when they showed all the stats, and none of their, you know, first five top scorers were not Clay, not Steph. It's like, what do you do? You know, it's like you throw you throw your whole game plan out of the window. What are you supposed to do when those guys are really making all of the plays? You know, you can't – everything can't be centered around, you know, stopping Steph and Clay. Because even if you slow them down, they got so many other guys that can definitely make plays. So my adjustments to me would be more just playing heads-up basketball. I think, you know, Cleveland is talented enough in every matchup to just play, you know, play each other and get back to basic basketball. We're going to help when we need to help. We're going to man up and defend when we need to defend, and then force them to beat our best basketball. You know, I think, and Golden State does, they pose a problem. Sean Livingston, it's going to be tough for Dellavedova or Kyrie or anybody them to guard him when he was on the floor. So, I think they're just going to have to figure out. They're going to have to put somebody bigger on him, maybe JR, and switch somebody else off to, you know, maybe Clay or something like that.
Exactly. And in order to beat the Warriors, I don't think you're going to beat them at their style of play. You're going to beat them by slowing things down, limiting them to key fast break and transition buckets. I think that that's going to be the tale of the series going forward. Obviously, I think you've got to play more heads-up basketball. I think there was a play that, you know, Steph and Clay were in, and they were on the right-hand side of the court in behind the three-point line, and they literally they took all five Cavaliers players across the court, and there were three wide-open Warriors players. And I think that's just the telltale sign of this first game. They didn't respect the rest of the Warriors players, really, did they?
No, which is crazy. You know, these guys have shown that they are capable of making plays and knocking down shots, you know,
exactly.
And to not take them seriously is just kind of crazy, but I don't think that's it. I just think they said, hey, if their bench beats us, we'll live with that. And their bench beat them. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So it's like, now we got to figure out how to make them we got to figure out how to make them beat us as a team. If Clay and Steph happen to go off, we got to withstand that run and just continue to play more heads up basketball. Make this be about them beating our best basketball, which I don't think Cleveland did. You know, and the other thing is LeBron. You know, I think LeBron can't start off feeling like he has to be the quarterback to where the next pass is going to be a shot. He may have to start a play and end a play. You know, give the ball up a little bit earlier and then be the recipient of actually, you know, making that play and making that score, you know, instead of saying, hey, I'm the quarterback, I'm going to start this play. He may be the guy that just, you know, initiate the play and then, you know, at the end be the finisher.
Exactly. They've got to get to the line more, too. I think that's a huge key in this game and in this series.
Yeah.
But I do want to shift gears a little bit, focus on we've got a lot of Raptors listeners. And I just want to get your take. I want to get your take on Casey. And obviously he's extended. What are your thoughts on Dwayne Casey and then the Raptors' future overall?
You know, Dwayne Casey has done a good job. You know, I think when you look at their team, the way that it's built, the way that each guy has grown, the way that they've kind of adjusted all season, you know, they beat all types of team. They went on the West Coast and had a good run. They've done some really good things. So I think they are just at that point of taking that next step. You know, here it is. You know you're good enough to be the second best team in the East. If not record-wise, you know, they only finished like a game or so behind Cleveland. So you have to be excited about that. And I'm sure that starts with getting Valanciunas healthy. You know, making sure you sign DeMar DeRozan, which, you know, I don't know how difficult that's going to – I don't know if it's going to be difficult or not. And then, you know, you got to bank on the fact that DeMar Carroll is going to be healthy, you know, all year. And Dwayne Casey will figure out the best way to use him. But you're going to have to firm up that bench, you know, with anything else. You got to have some consistent guys coming off that bench that's giving you the kind of production you need to be an elite team, not just a good team, but an elite team.
Exactly.
So I think they're ready to. I think they're ready to take that next step. If I had to choose right now, I would say they next year they would end up second, right behind Cleveland again, and pushing them to the brinks of, you know, of a game six or game seven going in the Eastern Conference Finals. You know.
Cool. And then we'll get you out of here on this question. I know you have a lot of stuff to do here. Go back to your playing days a little bit. Do you have some favorite Raptors players or memories of playing in Toronto?
Oh my goodness, a ton. You know, it's the guys that I play with there. You know, they make going to practice just you just wanted to go, and that's hard to do after being with guys. You know, it gets around All-Star break, and then after All-Star break, you're like, man, this is long. It's dragging out. You guys, there's more fights in practice, you know, going into March and April. And the fact that I was there with, you know, Kevin Willis, Charles Oakley, guys who I've battled against, and here they are teaching me how to, you know, be a professional each and every day. And then playing with a guy like Vince Carter, and when I first got there, Tracy McGrady, Dale Curry, Muggsy Bogues. Every day was just, you know, a phenomenal day. You know, it seemed like we were just a bunch of misfits trying to, you know, show the world that we belonged, you know, and we end up in the playoffs a couple of years and just a lot of great memories. I think the best one is, you know, playing in that series against Philly, you know, in the second round where we lost game seven in Philly. But man, the fans seemed to just be growing, you know. It's that time early on when I got there, and the fans only cheered when we did something good. You know, it's like you need fans when you're down at home, and you know you need to try to change momentum. But you can just tell the fans now really learn the game of basketball, and when they need to be loud, they're loud. And I just love that about their fans and the support up there. Jurassic Park. I mean, look at how many fans are outside. You know, where else do you see that, you know, going on? So I just love the way that city's grown.
Definitely. Well, that's all we have for you today, Antonio. I really appreciate the time. I know you're a busy man, and we look forward to having you on again. Enjoy the rest of the week in this finals.
Hey, no problem, man. Call me anytime.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. All right, bye-bye.
And that's Antonio Davis, everyone. That was some great insight, especially about the series. I mean, he's totally spot on. They are going to have to make some adjustments. They cannot beat Golden State the way that they played yesterday. They really, really, you know, obviously they're trying to focus on Stephen Clay, but I think he's right. You've got to just face him head on. You've got to try and do your best on Stephen Clay and not allow everyone to get theirs, quote unquote. So moving on, I did want to talk about the Raptors for a little bit. We're going to try and see if we can get Noah on here, see if he is available or around. But while we're talking, you know, I do want to talk about the Raptors, and I think Dwayne Casey deserves this extension. As much as people are bashing it or don't really respect what he's done, got to look at the pedigree. Look at what he has accomplished. Okay, they got to an Eastern Conference Finals. They set a franchise record in wins. They're on the uprise, right? They've got Kyle Lowry. They've got DeRozan, obviously free agent impending. But look, they've got a lot of young guys on that team. DeMar Carroll signed up for the long term. As long as he can stay healthy, this team is going to be good. Keep hope there in Toronto. I think that there is a next level they can get to. And I think it starts by getting one more free agent, one more guy. And so from there, that's what's going to be the difference maker. I think that Valanciunas needs to be healthy. I think they need to retain Bismack Biyombo, which he has expressed interest in coming back. That is not going to be an issue. And they've got a high draft pick. They'll need to choose it wisely. Choose someone that they can actually utilize and is NBA ready. And no offense to DeLon Wright or any of those other younger guys that they've drafted, but they are not NBA ready. So we've got to look at that aspect. Got to take that into consideration. We've got to figure out what's going on and go from there, right? And so with the Raptors, they did everything they could this season. They're not going to get past Cleveland. The talent level isn't there against Cleveland. But if they get one more piece and they can kind of not change the style of play, but play a little more consistently in the playoffs, which I think they've got experience, so they can do that now. I think that will be the difference maker in potentially stretching this series like this season out to 7 games and doing the best that you possibly can. Trying to get home court in the playoffs would be huge for Toronto, especially a team like that. As Antonio alluded to, best fans in the NBA, one of the best fans in the NBA up there. And so you've got to take that into consideration as well. How do you win in the regular season? How do you continuously win? Deepening up that bench, fortifying the guys that are 6, 7, and 8, making sure that they're getting to the same rotation minutes and getting confidence. Because, you know, you see guys like Terrence Ross, either they DNP or play 5 minutes, or they play 35 minutes and play well. And so that comes from the players, that comes from the coaches, that comes all the way up from the GM beyond. You've got to have consistency. All the teams that play very well in the playoffs, in the season, the teams that are statistically very, very good overall, it's Golden State, it's San Antonio, it's teams like that. They have options. They are available at times when you need them. And that's why I'm saying this. You need to have consistency. You need to have a clear-cut idea of what you're going to do from the start of the season to the very end of the season. And now, let's just take a listen here really quick. I'm going to do a little intro before we get our next guest on. Dave Smith will be coming on shortly. Noah, unfortunately, will not be able to make it. He is at an airport right now traveling across the country. So we'll try and get him on whenever we possibly can. But, you know, Dave Smith will be on shortly. Just listen to this clip again. I want you guys to listen to this LeBron rebuttal. I think it's hilarious, and it's just so funny. We didn't get a chance to really talk about it. Listen to it again, and then we'll talk about it after.
Far right side of the aisle.
Jason Lescue, SFA. LeBron, does obviously this team and the series is a lot different than last year, but how much different after this game here do you think it is?
I don't quite get your question.
With, you know, the Warriors roster is the same, but, you know, last year it was Curry, it was Clay, and some of those guys taking over. But after game one, having the bench go and score 45 points, does that change your view of how this series might go and what you have to prepare for?
I think you're wrong in the fact of saying it was just Clay and Steph. I mean, they got to the point where they were last year and won a championship because of their whole team and their bench. And they're here once again in the finals because of their whole team. So, you know, nothing has really changed. They're a team that's had another year under their belt, and they've exceeded what they did last year. So it's kind of hard to answer that question because it's not really true.
And there's LeBron, obviously. It's not really true. I think your answer is wrong. I just find that hilarious, and I love the media scrums that go on at games and just kind of the atmosphere and what goes on. I find it so interesting to listen in and hear different people's questions and ideas, but when you have a question like that, obviously LeBron is going to be like, what are you talking about? And you can look it up on YouTube. His facial expression is just it's priceless. it's really wonderful. I think it's always fun when someone makes a mistake like that. Not to make fun of the media member. Look, people have bad questions. They have bad nights, whatever. I just find it very funny to me listening in and hearing LeBron just be totally confused with some of these questions. It's always good to hear. But like I said, Dave Smith will be on here shortly. We're going to give him a call, talk to him about some of the NBA playoffs, the finals. We'll get into a little Raptors. We'll get into his career first is really what we want to talk about and just kind of going through how he got to where he is, do some of the normal KO show routine, a little more in-depth interview with a guy who is just known in this industry, NBC Sports Radio host Dave Smith. Once again, you can find him on SiriusXM as well as a lot of the national NBC networks, depending on which city and state you are in. But going into this series, I really felt like the Warriors were the better team. And the reason I say that is they are a better team, quote unquote. You know, that is the difference. Cleveland has 3 great players. They're probably more talented but they don't have the coach. They don't have the philosophy to be able to play with a team like the Warriors. And I'm not saying they're that much worse. That's not what I'm saying. And I think this series is going to be interesting either way. And I would not be surprised if Cleveland came back and showed us that they could beat the Warriors. But when we're sitting here discussing the difference between a championship team and a team that is in the championship, that is the difference between Golden State and Cleveland in my mind. You have Steve Kerr, who I believe is one of the most underrated coaches. Yes, he can be snarky. He can be rude. He can be a little bit condescending at times in the media and with interviews and all that sort of stuff. And maybe he puts on a little bit by breaking these clipboards, which I think it's funny. It's very pop-esque in my opinion. But you know what? Beyond that, he knows the X's and O's. He knows this game better than a lot of others. And I think that that's the reason you're seeing this success from this Warriors team. Obviously, they've got two of the best players in the league, Clay and Steph. But it's not only that, guys. It's the pick and rolls, the way they move the ball, the efficiency at which they are scoring. It is historical. I'll take everyone, calls here, there, and everywhere about how this team is the greatest team in the NBA. And I think that they could be right up there with MJ's Bulls, or if you want to go down to the Bad Boy Pistons, or however you want to just spin it, I think they're right there in that conversation, if not the best team. And the reason I say that is they're able to overcome adversity. When they look out, they're not. And, you know, I don't know how many times this season we've seen them come back from deficits, and it looks so calm and so just easy. They make it look simple, and that's why it's entertaining. That's why we watch. That's why they play. It's so enjoyable. There is a different level that they play at than any other team that I've seen. It is fun to watch. I enjoy it. That's why I'm rooting for them. I'm not a Golden State Warriors fan. To be completely honest, I'm not rooting for Draymond Green necessarily and his aggressive nature. But do I like how Draymond Green plays? Do I like how much effort he puts in? Do I like all the other things, the intangibles that he brings to the game for the Golden State Warriors? Of course. He's excellent. Look at what he does. He's the center. He's the one. He's the two. He's the three. He's the four. He can be anywhere on the court at any point in time, and it doesn't look like he's outmatched. He presents all sorts of nightmares on the offensive and defensive ends. You've got Steph, Clay. You've got Livingston coming off the bench, who's 6'4 as a point guard, 6'5 as a point guard, and can hit those pull-up jump shots basically any time of the night. Turnaround fadeaways, he's got it nailed from that like 12 to 14 feet range. And I'm just telling you, this Warriors team is still hungry. Clay wants it. Steph wants it. Draymond wants it. This team wants it. I don't care how much you think that one championship is enough. It's not. This team does not think that way. As you can see, 73 wins in the regular season. No one else has that. That is an NBA record. Okay? While we're discussing, you know, this NBA Finals, I don't care who wins. To me, the Warriors have proved to me that they are the best team in the league, whether they win or lose in the NBA Finals. And people can disagree with my commentary on this, but they don't need a ring to validate how good they are. I think they're going to win the ring, but if they don't, I know that Golden State will be upset. I know that a lot of other people would be upset, but let's look at this from the broad perspective of they won 73 games. They beat two of the three best Western Conference teams in the playoffs when it mattered, when it counted, when everybody said that they were down and out, 3-1, down 3-1. They come back and beat Oklahoma City. They proved to everyone that they're still around. Steph is injured. So what? We'll still beat the Blazers in 5. You know? And that is the difference. Along with all this, and that's what I'm trying to say, is they are the most entertaining basketball team as well as being the best basketball team. That is what is so enjoyable about this. We are witnessing history. It's great to watch. It's so fun. I mean, it just is. And like I said, I'm not a Warriors fan, but at the same token, the Warriors are the Warriors. They do things that are different than other teams. They continually beat up other teams. And they really, I mean, LeBron, frustrated. Lou, he looked relaxed, but you've got to think in the back of his mind, he's thinking, what am I going to do? Because there were moments in that game where there's nothing you can do, Tyronn Lue. Really. I mean, you're going to make adjustments. You're going to make changes. You may still win this series. But in this first game, the Warriors came out and really punched the Cleveland Cavaliers in the mouth. So with that, like I said, we're going to bring on Dave Smith here, host of NBC Sports Radio, good friend of mine. And we're going to get here and start chatting about some of this series and get into some of his career, as well as a couple other things as well that I'd like to touch on. The Toronto Raptors, I really am interested about them. And the reason why we're talking about the Toronto Raptors so much, I think, is because I'm intrigued. It's just an intriguing team this season. And I think they did a very good job under Dwayne Casey. And I think that they have every right to have some time on the show. So we're going to give Dave Smith a call here and see what he's been up to and then try and see where we can go from there. But like I said, don't take the Warriors for granted. They are a great team. They are doing things that no other team has done. And the reason why these Bulls and former players are coming out is because they're probably jealous. They're making more money. They're having fun. They're enjoying their basketball. And it's entertaining. I mean, it's everything that you'd ever want as a basketball player. I don't know any basketball player, free agency-wise, that wouldn't want to be considered to play in the Warriors, a Warriors uniform. So that's what I'm trying to say about this, and that's really where we're going. We're going to give a call to Dave Smith here. Dave Smith of the NBC Sports Radio Network, Sirius XM, and great guy, wonderful. I think he's on with us now. And joining us today, obviously, Dave Smith with NBC Sports Radio. How's it going, Dave?
Hey, Oliver, how are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. It sounds like you're driving. I know that we had just talked about this earlier. I want to get your impressions, I want to get your impressions of this game one. I'm just so intrigued with this matchup. I'm all on the Warriors. I think that they're just a better team. What is your impression of game one and then moving forward in this series?
Well, number one, I was surprised. Maybe it was a strategical move by Steve Kerr that he didn't cut out zone or that matchup hybrid zone that he used so successfully against the Thunder in games 5, 6, and 7. Remember, Oliver, he's down 3-1, and Steph looked absolutely exhausted after game 4. It looked like they were done. We saw Russell Westbrook around and running into screens, and I think we can all realize Steph isn't back 100% yet from all his injuries. He's close, but he's not all the way back, and Russell Westbrook was just killing him, getting to the hoop and getting everybody in foul trouble. And so, wisely, Steve Kerr followed my suggestion and went to a little bit of a hybrid zone the last three games and turned the entire series around. So, you know, you got to play LeBron the same way you play Westbrook, because the one weakness in their games is neither one of them are good outside shooters. So I was surprised. They came out straight man in the first half, and LeBron made 5 or 6 layups with no help. But then in the second half, finally – maybe Kerr wanted to switch on him or surprise him or something. He didn't go straight zone, but he did go like one-man zone with Bogut and Azili. And every time LeBron made any kind of move toward the paint, there was help and a second guy there. And that, I think, was a real smart move. That's the way you got to play him, I think. And Golden State's entire strategy, Oliver, has to be to turn this into a three-point shooting contest. Seal that lane off, sag off LeBron. And if it's a three-point shooting contest, there's no way the Warriors are going to lose to this team.
Exactly, and that's what I've been saying. I've been preaching. You're preaching to the choir here in this category. But really, I mean, Golden State, you can't beat them at their own game. If Cleveland's going to be in this series, they've got to slow this thing down, and they've got to go give it to LeBron, have him pound the paint, and have him get to the free throw line. And unfortunately, what the Warriors are doing so well is, like you said, they're playing that one-man zone. You saw Bogut at times on him, playing him well defensively. He was getting frustrated. And it can't happen. It can't happen at all. With this Cleveland Cavaliers team, he's the driving force behind it. If he can't get his, I don't think the rest of the team can. And you saw him being absolutely frustrated throughout this game.
Yeah, and you know, LeBron's not going to beat you shooting jump shots. You know, he might get hot one or two games in the series and make a whole bunch. You know, they might win one or two games. LeBron might get streaky hot, and, you know, they might win a game or two, but he's not going to beat you four times shooting jump shots. They're not going to win the series. So that is absolutely the way you have to play him. You know, Oliver, when LeBron kills you, where he's so great, if he's such a fantastic playmaker, when he gets past that his man and he gets into that paint, he either gets a layup, he either gets fouled, or he kicks it back out to one of his teammates who are absolutely wide open. He breaks you down and he gets you out of rotation and destroys you. But when you seal that lead off, I don't care how many Channing Frye's you add or J.R. Smith or any of these new guys, these snipers they brought in, they're doing you a favor if they're shooting jump shots and if LeBron's on the perimeter and they can't beat the Warriors playing their game.
No, not at all. And the other thing that I found interesting is Cleveland's defensive strategy seemed out of whack. And there's one play in particular. I was talking to Antonio Davis earlier, and there was one play in particular where Clay and Steph were on one side of the court and all three Warriors players were on the other side. And Cleveland literally had all five players matched up on Clay and Steph on one side, leaving the entire side of the court open. That can't happen. And I'm interested to see, what do you think Lou needs to do defensively to match up against this Warriors team?
Well, you certainly can't go zone against the Warriors. That's the last team in the world you want to do that with. So, what he needs to do here, I think Jeff Van Gundy brought up a good point last night. That whenever they throw the ball into the post, into Bogut or Azili or Draymond, whoever's playing in the post, they love to run that split. Clay and Steph are run toward the post, and they do a split off of him. And Cleveland's doing a really poor job, number one, of recognizing it and rotating. And number two, I don't understand why when Bogut or Rosili gets the ball out in the elbow at the free throw line, why the defender's up in his face guarding him. It's just they're not going to hurt you from there, from 15 feet. You got to back completely off of him, and then when you do that, you know those guys splitting the post aren't going to be open. There's going to be somebody waiting for him. And also, they were pointing out last night and watching the replays here, Oliver, that they are so worried to death about Steph, I guess, which they should be. They're switching every screen. They're jumping out on him.
Yep.
They're doubling him. But the screener, like a couple of times with Barnes and Draymond last night, they're not rotating over to them, and they get the ball into the basket for easy layups. So you made
wide
a
open
point that they're leaving the – I guess the strategy for Tyronn Lue is I don't think the rest of the Warriors supporting cast can beat us. But
yeah,
based on the fact last night – yeah, but based on – I mean, if Steph and Clay only get 20 points between them and shoot, what was it, like 8 for 27, and you still lose by 15, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. I mean, it is a mess. And I've been saying this. I mean, I went on your show a while ago, and I was just, you know, LeBron, Kevin Love, and Kyrie Irving, they're great players individually. The interesting factor of this whole thing is Tyronn Lue. I think that is the X factor in this series. I've said it all along, is how can he outcoach Steve Kerr? And I just don't think that's possible. And I think that right now you're seeing it, obviously game one. I'm really interested and intrigued with how he's going to change things up in game two. And I'm also curious how much of a factor he actually is with this team and how much of an actual vocal leader he is with this team as opposed to LeBron.
Well, I think, number one, they've got to get a lot better ball movement because and again, this is the Eastern Conference. That's the junior varsity tournament over there that Cleveland got through. But the ball movement was a lot better there. And they've got to move the ball and cut and screen the way the Golden State Warriors do. They have a beautiful offense to watch. And they were doing a lot of standing around last night going one-on-one. And that's not going to beat the Warriors, particularly a guy like a Kyrie Irving. So, you know, look, I think they're going to have to get some help from the Warriors. And what I mean by that is some bad coaching by Steve Kerr, which I don't think is going to happen. If the Warriors are playing a straight man and LeBron can do whatever he wants and gets into the paint and makes plays, the Cavaliers can win. Much like Mike Budenholzer and Frank Vogel and all those dopey coaches in the East play them straight up man-to-man and they wind up getting swept and they never learn from it. Scott Brooks in the 2012 finals. Unbelievable.
There you go.
You know, Oliver, 2011 – Dallas played six games of zone against Miami and surprised the heck out of them and won the series in a big upset because they forced LeBron to shoot jump shots. So Rick Carlisle said, I don't think you can beat us. If you're going to beat us, you're going to have to beat us shooting jump shots. And he couldn't do it. And then the next year, I guess Scott Brooks didn't have a projector or his film room was broken or something. Nobody learns from it. He plays him straight man and he loses. And, you know, Pop played LeBron that way. Pop didn't play zone, but they switched every screen. They sagged. They had three big guys guarding the rim. They kept LeBron out of the lane. I don't get it, Oliver. These coaches in the NBA are are so stubborn. I mean, I've interviewed a whole bunch of them, and I always ask them why they don't play zone, and they tell me, wow, that's sissy basketball. That's a sign of weakness. That's what the seventh-grade girls' team would do. You know, we're men here. So evidently they'd rather lose than play a zone. And just my philosophy, Oliver, is if it's within the rules and it can help you win,
do it.
All that matters is winning the game.
Yep. Yeah, and it's incredible. I've said this to pretty much all season, is really the Golden State Warriors are historically great. I mean, the way that they play, the entertaining basketball style at which they play is probably the best I've ever seen. I don't think there's anything even close. The way things have been done in Golden State, it's just incredible. And I don't know, even if, you know, for whatever reason, if they lose this series, I don't think I can take anything away from what they've done this season. And I think that a lot of people are mistaken in saying that unless they get a ring, this is a lost season.
Well, I mean, it'll be a disappointment, but I think it would have been a lost season if they hadn't made the finals. Let's say if they lost to Oklahoma
there
City
go.
Here. But if for some reason, let's say Cleveland just gets unbelievably hot and LeBron makes everything from the perimeter, and if they do that, they're going to lose. But that's the philosophy of the Warriors. Then you go over and shake their hand and say, good shooting, LeBron, because, you got to give up something. I mean, and the bottom line is, LeBron, the only thing LeBron isn't absolutely great at on a basketball court is shooting perimeter jump shots. So, Oliver, wouldn't common sense dictate we're going to force him to do what he's not good at? Because if we don't, he's going to kill us if we don't. And getting to your point as well with Golden State's beautiful offense, you know, it's a lot of fun, Oliver, and I'm sure you do this too. When you watch these Golden State Warriors play, watch off the ball. Don't watch the ball.
Yes,
everything that's going on the weak side and the picks and everything they do to get Clay and step open and the rolling to the basket. It's a beautiful offense to watch, which is why when people tell me that Steve Kerr was handed the keys to a Ferrari and he's not a good coach, it's ridiculous. I mean, he's designed this offense, and what about that adjustment he made after Game 4 against Oklahoma City? Steve Kerr's a tremendous coach.
Oh, yeah. It's undoubtedly, I think he's one of the best in the NBA, if not the best. I mean, the way that he's managed the egos, along with coming in over a coach like Mark Jackson, who was loved by the players, by the organization, that to me tells all the story you need to tell at this point. And I think that, you know what, looking at this series, I think Warriors will win in either 5 or 7. I said 7 originally when the first thing happened. And if Cleveland was going to win, they'd have to win Game 1. I thought Game 1 was really the crucial moment because, one, the Golden State Warriors were coming off of almost no rest. Two, they're coming off an emotional roller coaster of a ride with that whole Oklahoma City series. And three, Cleveland is healthy. They're ready to go. They should have been rested and ready to play, and they did not look that way yesterday. I was shocked at how poorly they played, basically, throughout the game. I mean, it wasn't just one quarter or two quarter lapses. I mean, J.R. Smith had 3 shots. And that, obviously, you give some credit to Golden State's defense, but you've got to be able to make adjustments on this team, and you've got to be able to play better than what they did yesterday.
Absolutely. That's a good point. And when you do the math here, Cleveland's done, I think, if they lose on Sunday, because if they get down 0-2, that means they've got to beat the Warriors 4 out of the next 5 to win the series, and that's not going to happen, I don't think. Absolutely. So, I also think, Oliver, I don't know if you agree with me on this or not, if the Warriors win another championship this year, and I know there's been a lot of great backcourts in the NBA, I think Clay and Steph will go down as the greatest backcourt in the history of this league if they win back-to-back championships and continue to play this way. I'm not ready to say it quite yet, but another championship, they're already the best shooting backcourt, but I think they'll be the best backcourt maybe the NBA has ever seen if they win another championship.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I want to touch on a couple other things with you, Dave. First of all, I'm interested in your career a little bit, and on the show we really like to dive into how you got to where you are. Can you give me kind of a short summary of how you got to NBC Sports Radio and what you've done throughout your career to get there?
Yeah, that's a long, winding path here. I started about 20 years ago. I was a high school basketball coach and a teacher back in the day. And I used to listen to sports talk radio all the time. And I used to sit there and listen to myself and say, I said, these guys are idiots. I could go on the air right now with no training and be better than these guys. This is ridiculous. They're making mistakes, getting their facts wrong, saying stupid things. So Then I remember all my buddies back in the day. Man, you ought to be doing this. You're smarter than these guys. So then I started doing a little bit of research, and I went to some of my old college professors, and I talked to some radio industry people, and they were saying, well, what you have to do is go to South Dakota or North Carolina or go to some small little market and get a job announcing high school football and then work your way. And I said, no, there's got to be a better way than that. I'm not doing that. So then I started thinking about it and said, hey, what if I find a station where you can buy time, do brokered programming? And this is back in the days before the internet and internet radio and podcasts and things. So I found a station in Los Angeles where you could buy time and put yourself on the air. So I went to the program director and I walked in and I said, all right, I'm not going to feed you a lot of BS about how great I am. You've never heard of me. Just I want to come on Monday nights after Monday night football, like from maybe 9 to midnight every Monday for 6 months. How much? And he gave me a number. This is how much it's going to cost. So then I went out the next morning and started begging people for money. Went to businesses, and I bought the LA Times and the LA Daily News every day. And I noticed who put ads in the sports section. Who was running ads? These are sports fans. And so then I hit them all up, and spent about 12 hours a day driving around, hitting people up for money, and making phone calls. And I raised the money to put myself on the air. So then I was on the air there. That was the first time. And then I, after every show, I taped all the shows, and then, again, the days before internet and all this stuff, so I physically put the cassette tapes in envelopes and mailed them out to about 100, 200 sports talk stations every week after I did my show.
Wow.
And that led to KMAX FM in Pasadena. That was probably the first FM sports station in the United States. It was called Sports KMAX KMAX back in 95, and they put me on 8 to midnight. And they paid me $24,000 a year, and I thought I was a millionaire. I said, I was turning cartwheels. I said, man, somebody's going to actually pay me to do this? Incredible. So then I was there for a couple of years. Then they changed formats and went to music, so they kicked us all out. And then I wound up getting hired over at AM 570, which is a big sports talk station in L.A. now, and I was there for about 5 or 6 years. And then on to 1540 The Ticket in L.A., another local station for 4 or 5 years. And then Sporting News Radio, I did a national show for a couple of years for them. And then AM 830, the Angel Station, hired me to do a sports talk show. And then another national show at NBC Sports Radio. So it's been a long and winding road.
Wow. That's an incredible story. I mean, it really is.
Oh,
and every story is different.
I forgot my time in Portland. All
I know. Yeah, okay. I was waiting.
Yeah. 2011, I was at 750 The Game doing news of play every day in the great city of, and I moved to Portland and loved the people and loved living there for a year. I was at 750 The Game.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, no, 750 The Game is a great radio show. Actually, we do a lot of our recording at 750 a.m. radio, so The Game. So I want to touch on a couple other teams here, just kind of get your opinion on them. I'm really curious to hear your take. We have some Raptors fans that listen to the show, and obviously Casey was extended. I'm curious kind of your thoughts on Dwayne Casey's extension and then also the Raptors' future.
Yeah, they had a good record this year. They were number two in the East, but, of course, this is, again, the Junior Varsity Conference. The Raptors would have a difficult time making the playoffs if they played in the West. When you look at the roster of the teams that the Cavaliers have beaten here, I don't think Atlanta or Detroit would make the playoffs in the West, and I got my doubts whether Toronto would either. So I think they've gone through a gauntlet of lottery teams here getting to the finals. But as far as Dwayne Casey goes, I don't think he's a very good coach. I question him because when you watch those Eastern Conference Finals, Oliver, and listening to the show, and you come on my show as a guest, and I was tweeting about it.
Sure.
They played straight man-to-man against LeBron almost the entire time. And LeBron would get the ball on the wing, meet this guy off the dribble, go in and dunk or make a play. And I was, when are you going to zone? When are you going to double? When are you going to go hybrid? When are you going to do something? I mean, you can't play LeBron straight man and expect to win. He's going to absolutely destroy you. So, no, I don't think any of those coaches in the Eastern Conference are very smart because there's only one way to play LeBron, and they don't get it. You look at Mike Budenholzer with the Hawks. They've gotten swept 2 years in a row by LeBron.
Yeah.
And after both series, reporter asked Mike Budenholzer, well, why didn't you try a zone or why didn't you switch up? And he said, Well, we haven't worked on his own all year. We can't. I mean, we're not going to change what we've been doing all year. I mean, we've been successful in the playoffs, and we haven't practiced on, so we're not going to do it now. So if I were the owner, I would have fired him immediately when he said something like that. I mean, every team, especially the East, should have his own package ready to go. You know, practice it 15 to 20 minutes a day, every day in practice, after practice ends. Because there's a pretty good possibility, wouldn't you say, Oliver, if you're in the East, you're going to run into LeBron in the playoffs at some point.
Oh, yeah. There's always that.
You've got to be ready for him. You've got to play him straight, man, and let him do whatever he wants. It's insanity.
Yeah, it is quite ridiculous on that front. And then what do you think about the Raptors' future? I mean, obviously, DeRozan's up in the air, and you've got some free agency concerns, obviously. And then secondly, do you think they go out and make a move? Do you think anybody is even willing to go to Toronto just based on there's a number of factors. Obviously, the fans are great up there. The stadium and arena is nice. The housing is great. You get Canadians all over loving you. But the one thing that I find interesting is obviously it's Canadian money, so it's a little bit less than what the U.S. dollar is. And it's a little bit higher price to live there as well. What do you think free agency wise? Do you think anybody's going to show up there and just knock on their door and say, "Hey, I'm here to play"?
Yeah, that's a difficult market to attract free agents, and you touched on it right there. Number the taxes are higher, and plus you play double tax, you know, Canadian and USA. So you're giving up a lot more money to play there, which I know players don't like to do. And you know, DeRozan's a good player. He's a free agent. They're going to have to keep him, of course. They're going to have to probably overpay to do it. They're going to get Valanciunas, hopefully, you know, ready and healthy for the playoffs next year. For the regular season next year. I don't think they're ever going to get to the finals. They're good enough. If they keep this team together, they'll be a playoff team for the next 3 or 4 years. And maybe win a round or two. And, you know, they got lucky this year against Miami when you know, Chris Bosh was hurt and Miami had some injuries, because Miami would have, I think, certainly won that series if they were healthy. They had Whiteside and Chris Bosh both out against Miami wins that one in 5 games if they're healthy. And Miami would have been a good challenge to Cleveland as well, I think, in the Eastern Conference Finals. But,
definitely.
You know, I think Toronto will be the first playoff team for the next 3 or 4 years, but I don't think they're going to get to the finals. And as far as free agents go, that's a tough sell. You're going to a different country and you're paying double tax. I don't think it's a good draw.
Yeah, it's difficult, I know. One other question for you before we let you go here. Durant, free agency, do you think he's going to leave? I'm obviously on the bandwagon of he's probably staying. Let's hang on to these emojis and the rocket ships and all this other junk and save it for maybe next year when Russell Westbrook's a free agent.
Yeah, for Durant to leave right now, he would have to be really unhappy and not want to be in Oklahoma City. And I think he loves living there from everything I understand, and he's comfortable in Oklahoma City. And you know, I'm sure he's disappointed about what happened in the playoffs this year. But I think the smart thing for him to do and what he is going to do is sign a LeBron type of contract, a one-year deal with a player option for the second
year. There you go.
So that means he can get between $25 and $30 million next year, and then the salary cap goes up $20 million this summer, and then another $20 million next summer. So then in 2017, maybe he and Westbrook come to the Lakers in a package, or go somewhere else in a package, or because the Lakers will have enough money to sign both of them to max contracts next summer, if that's what they want to do. Or they can stay in Oklahoma City together and sign long-term deals and they can get more money staying where they are because of the collective bargaining deal. I just don't think Durant's going to leave this summer. I think it's going to be a one and a player option for a second, because he can make a lot more money doing it. And then he can sit back and see what they do in the offseason and see which way Westbrook wants to go and go from there, because he's in a pretty good situation here. You could say arguably they have the second, at worst, third best team in the NBA, and they're going to be a championship challenger as long as they have those two guys every year. So I don't know. It's hard to imagine getting into a better situation than he is now.
Exactly. Well, it's been great talking to you, Dave. We're going to have you back on. We're going to have to talk some more hoops and basketball and everything else. I really appreciate the time. Love the stories and everything else. But where can people find you if they don't already know?
Go to @DaveSportsGod, my Twitter handle, and I always love kicking it around with the fans and having some fun here. @DaveSportsGod is the Twitter handle, or you can go to NBCSportsRadio.com, and then you can check out my page there and listen to all the podcasts as well through there. So those are the two best ways to reach me.
All right. There you have it. Dave Smith, NBC Sports Radio. Great, great, great guy. You can follow him on Twitter, Dave Smith Sports God, and on NBC Sports Radio. Thanks so much for the time, Dave. We'll have to get a show on here shortly with you as well.
Absolutely, and come back on my show anytime, Oliver. I'm on 10 to 2 tonight. I'm on 10
all right.
o'clock tonight.
I'm happy to come
2
on.
So give me a call back a little bit later, and we'll line it up.
All right, sounds like a plan. Talk to you soon, Dave.
Bye. Thanks, Oliver. Bye.
All right, bye. And that was Dave Smith, and that's the end of our show.